Welcome back, everybody, to episode 158 of the Golf Unfiltered podcast. I'm your host, as always, Adam from golfunfiltered.com. You can follow me on Twitter at golfunfiltered, and you can send me an email, golfunfiltered@gmail.com. Highly encourage you to do so. I enjoy the emails that I get and the conversation that we have. We had a little bit of a hiatus there. I hope everyone enjoyed watching the Masters. I know that I did, and that is really one of the topics that my guest, Garrett Ford, has somebody that you know as originally as the Public Golfer or at Public Golfer on Twitter, but now he has a new Twitter handle, which we get into in this conversation. But he and I do dive deep into Patrick Reed winning the Masters, talking a little bit about what it means to be a fan of a golfer like Patrick Reed, or a sports star, I guess you could say, like that character. And it also goes into the line of, all right, what do we need to know about a person in order to be a fan of them? And so we dive deep into that, as well as talk a little bit about what Garrett originally had gotten some attention for under his previous Twitter handle, which was Botgate. If you remember all of that, for those of you who follow both of us on Twitter, there was some concern about fake followers. And I know that this is a very popular topic nowadays in today's society about fakeness on social media. And so he actually caused a little bit of a stir with that, as well as some others who took that story and ran with it as well. So we also touch on that. Couple quick shout outs, as always. First and foremost, to my friends over at the Hackers Paradise, if you're listening to this on the THP Radio app. I also want to say hello to my friends over at Cleveland and Srixon. Obviously, you guys know I'm playing their equipment this year, and it is finally getting much warmer. It has cracked 70 degrees today in Chicagoland. It's supposed to drop again to the 50s, I think, on the weekend. So it's like a roller coaster ride over here, but it's nice to be in the spring. And I also want to say hello to my friends over at budgetgolf.com as well. You guys do great things over there. So without much further ado, I hope you guys really enjoy this conversation with Garrett Ford on, you know him on Twitter. If you have any feedback, or if you have anything that you'd like to contribute to this conversation that you're about to hear, please reach out to myself at Twitter or on email. So sit back, relax. Here we go. Welcome back, folks. This is Adam with the Golf Unfiltered podcast. As I mentioned in the intro, it's been a very busy golf season, and we just had our first major, at least on the men's side, come through with a very controversial first-time major winner in Patrick Reed. And we have a few other things that I'd like to get to in today's conversation with my guest, Mr. You know him as Mr. Garrett Ford, or at G Ford Golf on Twitter. Previously known as the Public Golfer, is that right, Garrett?
That's right. Yeah, I changed it recently.
And we didn't even talk about this in the pre discussion, but what prompted the change of the Twitter account?
Well, it was a move from being completely anonymous on Twitter to semi anonymous. Mm-hmm, right. Mm-hmm. I am using my real first name now, and I felt like changing to my real first name. Was a kind of act of transparency and sort of self-editing, right? So I don't want to say anything on Twitter that I wouldn't actually say in real life. It makes me think about what I say, which is a good thing, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And that makes a lot of sense. And listeners who are familiar with what Public Golfer was, and now you as G Ford Golf on Twitter, understand, I hope, that you've got a lot of great golf thoughts. And so when I was thinking about recording an episode to talk about Patrick Reed and the background of his family and all the stuff that everyone, if you turn on the internet, do you turn on the internet, Garrett? I don't know.
It's just there.
If you log onto the internet and you research anything about the Masters or about Patrick Reed, you're going to see a lot of different stories about his background, his family, his history, and all that stuff, least of which about how he played at Augusta National. I knew I needed to get someone on that could speak intelligently to it, and you are certainly that. But I assume, let's just ask the obvious question. I assume that you watched the Masters.
Yes, I did. Obsessively.
So we have that baseline established now. And, you know, in watching Patrick Reed win his first major, as I mentioned, I think it's safe to say also that the reaction has been mixed, to say the least. Wouldn't you agree?
It has been. Yeah.
And with that, you know, it's even so far as how people reacted when he sank the final putt. What was your reaction when you saw on television? Because I assume that you weren't at Augusta, but it was just a different atmosphere.
It was eerie, right? It was even to the point of being awkward. Usually, the reception of a leader coming up the 18th fairway at Augusta is rapturous, but there was definitely a hesitation throughout the day to embrace Patrick Reed as a hero. And a lot of people have speculated about why that was the case, but it certainly came through, or at least I thought it came through in the telecast. Now, it's possible that I was projecting that on the telecast, but yeah, it wasn't loud.
Yeah,
It's strange.
it was very strange. Yeah, and it was an what made it even more strange was how exciting the day was on Sunday. You know, you've got,
Yes.
you know, Jordan Spieth doing what he was doing. You got Ricky Fowler, who, oh, by the way, no one's really talking about me, but I'm gonna finish in second.
Right.
And then all of a sudden we
Second.
get to, you know, oh, well, yeah, okay, well, Patrick Reed won, and he came in as the 54-hole leader, and we kind of expected that he would, but and he did, and it was very quiet. Did that seem like just an odd dichotomy to you?
It really did. And it was also an expression, I think, of how I felt. And I wasn't proud of that necessarily. But the two other players who had a real chance at the end were Jordan Spieth and Ricky Fowler. And those are incredibly popular young players. Patrick Reed has a checkered history with golf fans. And so I think that in addition to being lukewarm about Patrick Reed winning the Masters, that people were perhaps a little bit disappointed that Jordan Spieth and Ricky Fowler didn't get to a playoff. I know I certainly was. And, you know, that's the thing about golf fandom is that you end up rooting for people and you don't really know why, and sort of rooting against people. And I personally feel a little bit guilty about that because I don't know Patrick Reed. And yet I was hoping toward the end that maybe he would miss a putt or two so that there would be a better chance of a playoff with Jordan Spieth and Ricky Fowler, which would have been awesome.
It would have been, and I can relate to you on your feeling with that. I was watching the final round at a friend's house, and my friend is actually a pretty accomplished golfer in his own right, and you know, he just looks at the way that these guys play in a different way than the average TV viewer, I would say. And actually, coincidentally, he went to the par three contest this year. And so, and picture this: he and I sitting on his couch watching the television with yardage books that he had picked up from Augusta, and we were playing this game where we were trying to guess how far out somebody had to the hole. It was really nerdy
Golf
stuff.
Central.
Absolutely. But we felt the same way. Like, we were actively rooting against Patrick Reed, and it, to the point, like, if you remember on the 17th hole where he, you know, he hit a putt off the green,
Right, and it hit the hole,
and hit
right?
the hole, and we were like, oh,
Exactly. You're
yeah,
like, man, keep rolling.
keep rolling, keep
But
which.
then you think about it and you think that's terrible. That's bad juju for a golfer to root against another golfer.
Oh, absolutely. I'm going to shoot 200 the next time that I go and play golf because of all of these bad things I said. And so, but all of that though is very much everything that you shared is very much what I think many people felt. And to the degree, I don't know if you saw on Twitter that you know, an Augusta native sports writer actually tweeted that when the final putt fell, the media room was like a morgue.
Yeah, Scott Michaud tweeted that, didn't he? I'm not sure
Yes, he
that's how you
did.
pronounce his name, but yeah.
He did, and it was very telling, I think, that, you know, yes, you had mentioned that Patrick Reed has a checkered past, and yeah, I think a lot of people really don't know what to think of him.
Right. Yeah, he's a little opaque in interviews. he isn't the best performer of authenticity. And I think that there are certain young golfers who are equally accomplished who are good performers of authenticity. And that doesn't mean that they're actually authentic, but they're a little bit better at conveying that they're telling you the truth, even if they aren't exactly telling you the truth. And I thought about this. There are other reasons why people hesitate about Patrick Reed. Obviously, he has Augusta roots, and maybe some of the people at the tournament had heard stories about him. I know that the tour and the golf media is abuzz with rumors about Patrick Reed that have not been published and that I'm not exactly privy to, but obviously reporters like Scott Michaud refer to these rumors pretty consistently. And so there are many reasons, I think, why people are reluctant to embrace Patrick Reed. But I think one of them, especially for, say, if your friend that you were watching the Masters with, if he didn't know a whole lot of Patrick Reed's history, if he wasn't deep into the details of his past, in the way that some golf fans are, then I think that just watching him in an interview has a certain effect on people. He's a little bit stiff. It's like he's talking through his teeth all the time. And there's just something that at least I, when I watch him being interviewed, don't quite buy. Before I came on here with you, I was watching his interview with Faraday, and that was my overwhelming impression as I watched him interact with David Faraday, who's usually very good at kind of breaking people down. I didn't get the sense that he was being real. And that doesn't mean that he wasn't being real. That doesn't mean that he's a bad guy. It just means, as I said earlier, that he's not a particularly good performer of authenticity.
Yeah, I think that's very well said. And to your point, my friend actually did not know a lot of the backstory, and so
Right.
which is kind of the whole point, where if you actually dislike a sports figure, and all that you have to judge that person is how they perform in that sport, then I feel from a fandom perspective, that's totally allowed. You know,
Right.
like you can make a judgment on at least the way that somebody performs based on what you see on television, but the way that not only journalists but fans alike, and you had mentioned some of the perhaps Augusta natives who know a little bit more about Patrick Reed's backstory. And listeners, we keep referring to his backstory, but you can very easily find all the details about it if you just, Google Patrick Reed now. They have a different viewpoint of this man. And, I raised the question, though, to you, Garrett, is, how important is it for us as fans to know every little thing about who we watch, in your opinion?
It's a tricky question. It's obviously not very important. And yet, when stories like Alan Shipnook's come out, we do read them,
Right.
right?
Yeah, we do. Yeah, we do.
And often I find myself moved by a well-done story about a golfer's personal history or personal life. I think there have been some really excellent journalistic pieces on golfers' personal lives that have not necessarily met the approval of the golfers themselves. I brought up on Twitter Wright Thompson's profile of Tiger Woods, a deep dive into his kind of meltdown in the mid-2000s.
Sure.
And it was an extraordinary piece. Some people have mentioned that a lot of the findings in that article had been reported before, but the way that Wright Thompson put it together told a moving story that truly illuminated an aspect of Tiger Woods and explained some of the things that had happened. Now, to a lesser degree, I found the same kind of insight from Alan Shipnook's article about Patrick Reed's estranged family. I really was moved by that article. And while I don't think I necessarily have a right to know that family history, or don't think it's important, particularly important that I know that family history, I'm glad to know that story because it's a pretty good story. Now, I'm aware that that story may have had a bad effect on Patrick Reed, might have tempered the joy of his victory. And that is something that, I acknowledge that's a legitimate concern. While I don't think golf fans necessarily have a right to know all this stuff, those stories are, some of them are quite good, and it has to be written by an excellent journalist. And that is, I think Alan Shipnuck is an excellent journalist.
I agree with you. And from what I've heard, that story that he wrote on golf.com, it was the most shared article in the history of golf.com.
Which, and that's amazing. Yeah.
It's incredible. You know, of all the histories, even all the toils and tribulations that the greatest player of this generation, Tiger Woods, has gone mm-hmm. through, you know, you'd imagine that this story about a Augusta native who may have had some run-ins with, you know, college stuff, as well as, you know, maybe a bumpy family history. You wouldn't expect that story. But I think that, to your point, I think that just pays credence to how well the story was told mm-hmm. by a journalist like Alan Shipnuck. And so, you know, it's what's interesting, though, Garrett, is, you know, we can think of all of these sports figures that we've watched and, you know, up to a certain point of the social media age, we didn't really know a whole lot about their backstory, and it certainly wasn't shared to the degree that it is now. I mean, it's 2018. Yeah. Everyone can know everything about anyone, really, yeah. Essentially, and it's kind of scary. Right. But, you know, do you feel that level of access that is no longer just reserved to the folks in the media center or the people that get the opportunity to go and sit down with parents while their son wins the Masters 3 miles away. Do you feel that access helps us as fans, or do you think that it's a detriment in any way?
I don't think it's a detriment to us as fans. I don't think that story did any harm to fans. The worry that I would have is that it did harm to, in some way, to Patrick Reed and the people close to him. And I think that's a legitimate worry. Sure. Does that kind of story whet our appetite for more stories like it? Is that sort of the direction of your thinking there?
Yeah.
Is that how it would do harm?
Yeah, maybe it is. You know, does it matter that I need to know every little thing about somebody in order to like them? Or can I just simply go off of what I see, much like my friend who I watched the Masters with, just based on what they see on television?
Right. I'll put it this way. I think that if we were privy only to stories that players approved, that golf would be less interesting than it is. If the only family stories that were allowed to be told about golfers were positive family stories that the golfers themselves endorsed, then I think golf fans would tune a lot of that journalism out because they would interpret it as PGA Tour propaganda, which essentially, I think it would be if you prioritized the players' approval that much. There are some fun, positive family stories out there for sure. I've enjoyed hearing about Ricky Fowler's childhood, right? He's got kind of these cool parents who live in this desert town in California, and they're really into motorcycles and, you know, it's yeah, kind right. of fun personalities. And you kind of find out something about Ricky Fowler through them. And obviously the Spieth family story is warm and fuzzy mm-hmm. in a genuine way, right? There's nothing really to be cynical about there. And that's fun to know about. But obviously those are player-approved stories. But at the same time, if those were the only kinds of stories that we heard about PGA Tour players, I think that we would probably put a little bit less value in the actually positive family stories that we got. Now, say family stories were completely off limits, that all we could focus on is the golf itself, And I don't imagine that there will ever be a world in which we do this, but this is what some people on Twitter are suggesting. Only the golf matters. Yeah, I think that it would make golf a lot less interesting. Golf is a drama of the personality. It's a drama of the emotions. It's a drama of the psyche. And that might sound a little bit too high flown, but I think anybody who's played golf knows that that's true. What you bring to the golf course in your soul and your mind is extraordinarily important. And so finding out a little bit about the souls and minds of the golfers that we are most invested in watching is enlightening, informative. It's entertaining.
One of the best elements of the 90s NBA, National Basketball Association, in my mind, was the fact that we had characters. And
yeah.
And then there was a, I don't know how old you are, but I'm in my mid-30s. And
I'm the same, okay, yeah.
And so you'll remember the characters I'm talking about. And, you know, yeah. We all knew when we tuned in on a Sunday morning, for example, that, oh, my God, the Pistons and the Knicks are playing. You know who's going to be getting in fights, right?
Beer, Charles Oakley. Yeah, yeah. Those guys.
John awesome. Starks, everyone. And then there was a period, and believe me, I have a point to this, but there was a period where the characters kind of went away. And mm-hmm. all of a sudden now, in a rejuvenated league, in my opinion, there's additional characters with Kevin Durant, LeBron, and others.
Yes.
Golf has always been a sport of characters, and we speak of them all the time. We talk about the greats, and we honor them with the ceremonial tee shots at the Masters, and we tune in to watch Tom Watson win the par 3 contest. Mm-hmm. But we try to speak of them in very positive terms, and we've never really had the chance to, I don't know, have a villain. Does golf need a villain to round out the character list?
I certainly think it would make it more interesting. I think that Patrick Reed being cast as a kind of villain in this Masters made that last day really engaging because people were rooting both for and against. To give credit to the kind of diversity of fan experiences, a lot of people were rooting for Patrick Reed as well.
Yeah, right. Sure. But
let's not forget he has his fans, his defenders, and certainly after Shipnick's story, a lot of these people came out of the woodwork to defend Patrick Reed. That was, in fact, the dominant response that I saw on Twitter. But does golf need a villain? Maybe it doesn't need one, but it makes these tournaments really lively to have characters like Bubba Watson and Ian Poulter involved, right? The reemergence of Bubba Watson is a big story of this year. And while there has been some push to see him as a kinder, gentler Bubba, I think there's strong evidence that he's still exactly the same person. And I love how Ian Poulter rubs so many people the wrong way. It's it's hilarious. He's such a personality. I think these kinds of characters make golf more enjoyable to watch. Now, it depends on the kind of villain we're talking about here, though,
sure,
right?
Sure.
So I think that the reason Patrick Reed might be seen as a villain is that his personality to a lot of people might be a little off-putting. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's a villain because he's estranged from his family. That makes somebody a villain. That just makes somebody a member of a pretty regular kind of family.
Yeah, right? He's human.
Yeah. Doesn't make us all bad people. And I certainly relate with aspects of what is apparently Patrick Reed's family story myself. And I don't think being part of a family like that in any way makes you a villain. And
sure.
So as long as we're judging people to be villains based on admittedly shallow criteria, it's all fun and games. But yeah, I don't think we need to be villainizing people based on personal histories that they can't control.
I think that's well said. You know, I don't think we need to force the villain to become the villain, you know?
Right.
And, you know, part of, we talk a lot about, the narrative of a lot of these sports stars, and specifically on the PGA Tour. And a lot of that narrative is shaped by the people who report about it. And what was interesting, to kind of segue into another topic I wanted to discuss with you, was this concept of, fake followers of some of the more popular Twitter accounts. And, I'll go wherever you want to go with this, and we don't necessarily have to call out, specific publications or names, but, there was an element, and many people who followed the Public Golfer Twitter account remember that there was this question about, hey, how many of these famous journalists or bloggers or whatever followers were actual people? I think we jokingly referred to it as hashtag botgate. And, how many of these, because we know anyone who's been on Twitter for 5 minutes knows that at times there are fake accounts that come up and they try to follow you for whatever reason. And this was a legitimate concern. And so, for listeners who might not know what I'm talking about,
give some background.
A little bit of background on what you the effort that you took on.
Sure. Okay. So a few months ago, I can't even tell how long ago it was. I guess it was a few months ago, the New York Times came out with an article about the phenomenon of significant famous Twitter accounts buying followers to bolster their image as influential Twitter accounts. And sometimes certain Twitter accounts would buy tens of thousands, even hundreds of thousands of fake robotic followers in order just to boost the number that they supposedly were followed by. Right. So this is assuming that your follower count is a kind of currency. And so there were certain people out there who were boosting that currency in a somewhat dishonest manner. And the New York Times reported this out through getting access to the files of a company that was selling fake robotic followers to various people on Twitter. And so they actually found people who had dealt with this company, given this company money. And so they had the real evidence. And the people and the institutions that bought fake followers were a hilarious mixture. And I think Jacobin Magazine was the socialist magazine was caught buying followers, which I just thought was hilarious. And then, there are also some folks that you would expect to buy followers. So it was a fascinating article to read. It was a bit gossipy. It opened up an interesting issue on Twitter, which is the phenomenon of bots. Obviously, bots have had a big influence on things that we would never think that Twitter bots would have an influence on. So it was an interesting story, a big story for a couple of days. And so it came to my mind to go to a tool that many people would use to detect whether accounts had a certain number of fake followers, right? So there's this tool called Twitter Audit that pretty reliably detects whether a certain account has, what percentage of an account's followers are fake or bots. First, I entered my own handle into Twitter Audit, and I was curious about how many bots were following me. And it was something like 2% of my following were bots, right? So I had 98% so-called real followers. And I thought, okay, that's pretty good, but also weird that I have, 15 to 20 followers that are bots. I didn't know that. That's interesting. So then it came to my mind to begin throwing other golf media handles in there and seeing what happened. I ended up entering about 200 different Twitter handles of various people in golf media. And my criteria for selection were
basically the journalist had to be kind of a public figure. I wasn't trying to, out regular.
Right. People. Right.
But, so I entered a bunch of handles in, and I noticed a kind of division. There were definitely accounts that had, 98%, 96% real followers and a few bots following them. And these were even accounts that had a huge number of followers, like the no laying up accounts, like, I don't know about John Cavalier, right? All of these accounts had huge followings, but, very high real followings. Sure. And then I noticed that there were a couple of handles that had really heavy numbers of bots following them. And I thought this was interesting information. I didn't necessarily jump to the conclusion that these media members definitely had bot followers, mm-hmm. but I thought it was striking that out of all the handles I entered into Twitter audit, there were just a few that were kind of upside down in terms of the ratio of fake to real followers. And so I sent out a cryptic tweet about it saying, hey, I entered a bunch of handles into a Twitter audit. I found out some interesting things, and immediately people were replying with, okay, come on, you got to tell us. And so I went through, some thinking about it, and I was like, this is probably not wise to do this, but, what the heck?
Yeah. Right. Let's see what happens.
Let's see what happens. And so I ended up writing a whole thing, kind of contextualizing this search that I did, saying, okay, I can't necessarily vouch for the accuracy of Twitter audit, but a lot of people seem to think it's valid. And I'm not saying that these people bought followers. I'm just saying that they had strikingly kind of weird ratios. And so these are the people. And I wrote that note. I attached it to the tweet. And all the tweet said was, please read the note first. So I was trying not to be sensationalistic about it.
Sure.
And then I attached screenshots of the accounts that had odd ratios of fake to real followers, and the response was substantial, mm-hmm. Scary, pretty interesting. A lot of discussions about the ethics of what I did, but also a lot of thoughts about. Well, isn't it interesting the prevalence of bots on Twitter, and wouldn't it be worthwhile to check our own accounts and see if there's anything we can do if we get followed by a lot of bots to eliminate them? Because that's the you can do that pretty easily.
Yeah, you absolutely can. There's tools available for that as well.
Right, Twitter audit being the main one. Right.
You can,
if you get a certain version of Twitter audit, you can easily eliminate your fake followers. But of course, you'd have to trust Twitter audit first in order to, nuke your following,
sure.
Which can feel uncomfortable to people for sure.
Well, and it would feel uncomfortable certainly for internet-based publications that really rely heavily on that following. And for the listeners, basically why this is important, not to. If I can expand on what you were saying, is these authors of articles that get published on these internet publications, we're talking about money here. We're talking about,
yeah.
People who can they drive a following to the hub website that is probably got a ton of ads on it that will mm-hmm. lead to clicks by you and me and others who read the site, which generates legitimate dollars that keep the lights on for these publications. And so,
right.
That is why it's important. What you bring up though is also very interesting about the ethical side of quote unquote what you did. And I should say that, I don't think you did anything improper. But it did raise the question, and I imagine that, these folks, I was very privy to some of the responses that you received because anybody can read them in the thread at
right.
least.
It's all public.
A lot of them simply didn't know that this was true. Now, believe
yeah.
them or not, which I tend to believe them, having known many of the people that you pointed out. But this does also speak to the greater overarching ownership of perhaps a publication that might
right.
be doing something on behalf of their employees that maybe the employees don't know about. And so
yeah.
that there's that element to it as well, I feel.
That was, yeah, there was some speculation about that. Honestly, I think the most likely case is some of these accounts that I pointed out, a few of which, a substantial number of which were Golf Digest writers, but there are also some Golf Channel affiliated folks and things like that. I don't believe that those writers themselves bought fake followings. I believe them when they say that they didn't and that they're puzzled by this. And I don't know if they were bought for them. I think there may even be a way in which, you know, a certain kind of Twitter bot follows a certain kind of person just involuntarily, and there are certain lists of people who just get a lot of fake followers. I don't really know how it works. And So, you know, obviously what I posted was inevitably going to be taken as an accusation of kind of low-level fraud against these writers. And I didn't mean it that way. But I do think that there is some responsibility on the part of a well-known writer at this famous publication to monitor their Twitter followings a little bit and see that the number that's next to their name is reflective of the actual following.
Which is interesting, not to interject, but that's interesting because what you actually, you doing what you did prompted action.
Yes.
Which was interesting.
Right. A couple of the accounts that that showed up on the list as having, having a lot of fake followers almost immediately well, let's just say mysteriously their followings were reduced by a third overnight, and a lot of the fake followers seem to have been expunged. You know, I wasn't trying to be a muckraker there and stick it to those writers, but I think it's certainly useful that they took a look at it and made some adjustments.
So what's interesting is you know, we've got this action that was taken, and you know, people cleaned up their accounts, and you know, we discussed why it was important. I think what's also important to understand is that, you know, the number of followers that these accounts have doesn't necessarily say that they're putting out bad stuff, you
right.
know, and I think that was something that I feel could have been interpreted, or the conclusion that could have been jumped to following all of this, you know, and I think that at least from what I saw, nobody was saying that, hey, you guys put out garbage. It's just, oh, okay, well, you're the numbers might be a little off.
Yes, absolutely. I think that also an implication that could be derived from this whole story is that these writers who have a lot of fake followers have achieved their positions of prominence not through writing talent. And I think that that's untrue. A lot of talented writers and media figures ended up on this list. And I think that a lot of them have certainly legitimately earned their place as big time golf journalists. And so that's something that absolutely should be clear as well. I do have varying opinions of the quality of work that some of the
for sure.
people on this list put out, right? But I don't think there's any necessary correspondence between a fake following and a low quality of journalism.
Yeah. Well said. Definitely. Absolutely. So, you know, we've covered a lot of stuff today. We've covered a lot of ground, and you know, I've enjoyed having you on here, Garrett. We're going to do it again in the future because I think I like to take a pause every so often on this show and just talk about, you know, stuff that's happening in golf.
Right.
I mean, listeners know, and you as well know, that this has we talk a lot about equipment, and we found kind of a sweet spot in there. But it is nice to kind of reconnect with the people that use that equipment, especially at a very high level, and the people that sometimes write about the people that use that equipment. So really appreciate you coming on, Garrett. And listeners, you could find Garrett on Twitter, as I mentioned before, at G Ford Golf. You can become one of his many real followers if you give him a follow. Garrett, thank you so much for coming on. We will definitely do this again soon.
Thanks a lot, Adam. This was fun.